You want to kick it off?
Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. Yes, I'll just talk. I'm Judy Nathans.
And over here, I'm Robert Winters. Yeah. So, you know, like the bad penny that keeps coming back. Yeah, yeah. That's me, of course. Yeah. So anyway, meanwhile, back at the shop. So, you know, in amongst occasional interventions from protesters and whatever, Cambridge City Council meetings have managed to take place nonetheless, either in Zoom or in person. Quite surprisingly, the most recent meeting
Robert, oops. Robert?
Yes, yes.
Okay, all right. I don't know what, can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, I'm hearing you just fine.
Okay, I'm getting a little blue thing in my corner here that says mute. I don't know, whatever. But you can hear me, right?
Yeah, we're fine, we're fine. So anyway, the city council meeting, actually the most recent one on February 13th, actually did go forward, even though the protesters are out in front yelling and screaming, but they didn't bust up the meeting this time. Thank you very much. And there were some interesting things on that agenda, as well as the meeting prior on February 6th. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I always speak sort of glowingly is that the Cambridge Historical Commission will do these landmarking studies, mm-hmm, for various properties in Cambridge. One of which was the Mariah Baldwin house, which is located on Prospect Street.
Right.
It was also another one, which is the Cambridge Electric Light and Gas building.
Right, right. A lot of talk on that one.
So that, so that went through, and it was, it wasn't like that was going to get voted down. Though, mm-hmm, I do know that there is actually sometimes, like, the Better Cambridge people have spoken out against landmarking because they see it as that's like they're standing in the way of knocking the building down, putting up a bigger building, right? Okay, so that's your point of view, right? So. I don't believe anybody spoke against landmarking, which was good. No. But if for anybody who, because they're all accessible from the city website, you can actually download these landmarking studies, and they are expert studies. Honestly, mm-hmm, these are publishable works that are just great, mm-hmm. And actually, I think it was after the meeting, I was on the telephone with Councillor Simmons. For another matter, but I introduced her to this thing called Atlascope.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, which is actually what you can do is you can overlay maps from different periods, either a modern map or say another period map, and let's say an 1893 map. And so what you can do is you can just swipe across, and you can transition from what was there then to what is there today. Or at some other time, like 1916 or 1930, wow, something.
Do you have a link to that on your website?
I don't know if I do, but I will.
Would
I will
you please
do, so
do that?
Soon,
okay, good.
Because it's incredibly useful.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, and though it was somewhat unrelated, I might as well mention this one right now. There was one of the things that really was kind of upsetting to not just Councilor Simmons, but actually I would dare say some of the people who live in Riverside neighborhood, because there was an order calling for, which might seem thoroughly benign. It says, mm-hmm, we'd like to have Memorial Drive shut down again every Saturday and Sunday for 3 out of 4 months out of the year. And it sounds very nice. You go rollerblading, do what you're going to do. Isn't that wonderful, right? But there has been kind of a persistent concern from some people who live in the Riverside neighborhood about the fact that when you shut down Memorial Drive, the traffic gets diverted to Putnam Ave.
Well, but wait a minute, back up. You said 3 out of 4 months. It goes longer than that.
I don't know when they started.
It starts like the end of April and it goes to the end of November.
I know, but the thing is, so that would mean December, January, February,
except for those three. Oh, I see what
exactly.
You're saying.
Exactly, yeah.
No,
yeah.
Also, because now it includes, I think for their own convenience, they don't have to set up and put it back together, it's all Saturday night, which to me is a real problem.
It can be a real problem, especially for the people who live on place like Putnam.
It's like, it's one thing, to have it when it's daylight, but
Right.
So, but well, go on. I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, Counselor Simmons was actually, she was pretty angry about it.
Yeah.
Right. The fact is that so you got people who basically think, well, that's just nice. We can go rollerblading and happy yeah. this, the happy that. But then there are some people who are going to get the downside of that.
Right.
And she quoted some, well, just to me, she was telling me about how people remember like where Putnam Gardens is now. There used to be of the bunch of houses that were used to be there that were built by a black man that got bulldozed in order to put up the Putnam Gardens. So that there's kind of a, at least from some of the older residents, there's a little bit of lingering resentment about the way the city.
I mean, I see that, but I don't see that quite as a direct comparison.
I was bringing it up only because in the context of the Atlas Scope tool, because I was able to sort of go through it, you know, and actually see, you know, see what used to be there and what's there now. And I was doing all over
the city. But there's a lot of gentrified, there's a lot of other people living in that neighborhood that still don't like it, and they're not all, you know.
No, I agree. But you know, and you know, sometimes city councilors will, even if they have a majority vote, will do something that they know is going to appeal to maybe the majority of people.
Sure. Yeah.
But for whom it becomes a burden on a minority of people.
I don't get the nighttime thing really bothers me, because especially when it starts to get darker, it's people aren't even out there after 7 o'clock, let alone all night. You know, so to have it closed, I don't know. This thing about open space and I, you know, from the beginning of the pandemic, I know we've talked about this 3 years ago. It's just like, we are so lucky to have a river that runs from one end of Cambridge to another. Okay. So you can actually go there and see water. And yes, maybe there's cars going by, but you can get there. We have Danahy Park. We have the new tomb. We do have some, I know, and Carlone keeps talking about open space, but we have Fresh Pond. There are places people can go. Maybe they have to walk half a mile,
but there are places
you can go.
But I think it needs to also be pointed out that Memorial Drive doesn't go to the river's edge. There is this whole strip of green and
places to
sit and walk and picnic and hang out there.
I sometimes
think it's nice that it's closed here, but
you don't have cars going wishing by, but you know what, you can look out and see. I don't know, it's just
we are
a city of 7 square miles. There's just so much open space you can have, and I think for a city that we have a lot of pocket parks, I feel it's a privilege to live here in many ways, and to have what we have. And even though it annoys me many times, I just feel like,
people just want
too much, you know?
I often will think about things in terms of like marginal benefits. So,
right. So
the thing is, okay, so there is a marginal benefit in having the paved portion of Memorial Drive be shut down. But let's not forget that there was already this principal benefit that was there all the time. That was accessed 24 hours a day, you know, 12 months out of a year.
Right.
You know, so it's a matter of really, do you want to sort of grow that over into the you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think that this may be a longer term thing that maybe is a discussion that should be had with the Department of Conservation and Recreation, which is, and they have already been doing plans where they're reconfiguring some of the spaces in the river roads.
Well, on, you know, the other like side, they, the whole thing.
Yeah, like Greeno Boulevard, they reconfigured things so that, you know, the road's further away from the river. Mm-hmm. There's more usable green space. There's actually fewer travel lanes. You know, so it's a good thing. Actually, even Memorial Drive, it was like 3 lanes on one side and 2 on the other down by MIT.
Yeah.
I think it was that has now been reduced, right? Some of those.
I don't know, but that stretch from actually from the BU bridge, which they redid that whole stretch from the BU bridge down to actually all the way down past the Mass Ave bridge is beautiful. And I know that is in the works for the other end of Memorial Drive, where it's not so nice between Western and River, you know, but
I mean, there are certain things, like for example, the, what do they call the Bowker overpass over in Boston, where they, you know, back in this sort of like insanity of 1950s highway planning, they built right over the Emerald Necklace.
Yeah.
You know, and there are some plans which apparently aren't going to go forward, which maybe is a shame, but where they would actually reconfigure that and restore it so that it would feel more like actual parkland. But apparently the problem is that we don't have too many really good alternatives for the roadways. So that, you know, if for example, actually, where the Massachusetts Turnpike entrance is, you know, for the Alston-Brighton entryways there.
Well, that's all going to be redone.
But it almost forces there to be a certain kind of highway nature to Memorial Drive for a piece get to the to the entry exits for Alston-Brighton.
Well, they're going to create a whole different way to, I don't even want to.
When they do the big change over on the Boston side with the Mass Pike reconfiguration, there's a lot of really interesting opportunities there. And I'm actually pretty excited, you know, to sort of see.
Well, that's already been discussed, a lot of it. I think they've decided on something, but I think it's getting pushed back. I don't know.
Right. But, you know, rather than arguing about whether Memorial Drive should be open or closed, or, you know, whether rollerbladers can have access to it or not,
to me,
the more interesting thing is the more long-term notion about DCR and mass pike realignments and things that may actually create really serious recreational and open space opportunities and better pedestrian and bicycle connections. You know, fighting over a bunch of pavement on Memorial Drive for a couple of weeks is sort of like, okay, fine. But I can't get too excited about it personally. Now, one other thing that actually happened at the city council meeting, this most recent one, was a carryover via charter right from a previous meeting. Or maybe not, but there's this lingering, well, there's this weird catching up that's happening out of the clerk's office for committee reports that are like a year old or several years old.
Yeah.
You know, which is, it was kind of pathetic that that was allowed to happen, but it happened. But so they've been getting things like committee reports with language for this so-called Budo amendments, you know, building energy use disclosure ordinance that dated back to like last spring. You know, and you know, that had some language. It looked like they were retrenching and going the reverse of what they'd already decided. Anyway, whatever. It's not that important. But what apparently one thing that's been a real flashpoint in over the last several months is the fact that there were these no longer about disclosure of energy use. It was mandates for retrofit of buildings.
Right.
Commercial buildings as well as residential buildings number of units, and that, including some that are very expensive, potentially very expensive. And the big problem was, is the community development departments basically were having this. We've been having public meetings about this for a while, but in fact, they were only with the big shots, and residential property owners had no idea about any of this happening. So they've now been made aware, and then they were kind of up in arms. So rather than fight the fight, you know, what there was a change in the proposed language to basically, rather than move the deadline for all this compliance from 2050 to 2035, they said, except for residential buildings, where we'll just leave it at 2050 so that they won't be up in arms and throw us out of office November.
But wasn't it also that for a long time that Eversource was never at any of these meetings? Wasn't that, or was that another?
If Eversource was involved at all, I don't think anybody.
Paul Toner called two different meetings.
Yeah. Nobody was actually asking the right questions.
Right.
You know, there's kind of
can we do this? Do we have the capacity? Is there distribution? Is there transmission? Where are we going to site all this electric?
Yeah. I sometimes jokingly refer, in this context and some other ones, I always refer to as engineering via wishful thinking.
Yeah, aspirational. You
know? Yeah. But you know, so it's great to say, well, let's just electrify everything, sure. But in fact, if the
where's power, it coming from? Yeah.
Yeah, if the grid doesn't actually have it. And then there's the other rather awkward truth, or shall we say an algorithm, the inconvenient truth that a lot of that power generation will for at least a good long while still be done by natural fossil fuels. So if you replace your gas stove or your gas heating system with electric, but then it's still being powered by fossil fuels elsewhere.
Right, because basically what we have here are distribution lines and transmission, but we don't, Eversource doesn't generate the power. that comes from.
They just carry it, yeah.
I mean, I just think people just don't understand the whole thing about electricity and about, you know.
Right. But it's very convenient for a city council to just snap their fingers and say,
we should have
electrify it all without actually thinking about the, you know, the on the ground realities about substations, power generation.
Yeah, because then you have people on the other side. Wait, we don't want the substation here. And we don't,
right.
I mean, if you look at, Eversource did produce that report in November 2022, which was one of the economic meetings. And I did download it. So I watched that meeting. It's very good because it really gives you a graph of where the electricity, you know, the distribution lines are and what's the future. And they did bring up, it's not just, you know, you have to deal with other communities. We're not just going to do all this just, you know, for Cambridge. I mean, there was a certain kind of budget.
And there was actually a Boston Globe article that highlighted, you know, they were kind of pointing a finger at Kendall Square saying, so what are you going to just screw us over here in East Boston or Chelsea? Well, meanwhile, say you can, you can do all this wonderful substations and
I mean, you have these Kendall other cities that are contiguous, Somerville and stuff. So it's a regional issue.
And it's also a question of physics, you know, and so we can all agree that it would be a good idea to move away from fossil fuels as a general principle, but making hard mandates based on wishful thinking is not necessarily the right way to do this.
Well, but some people,
Patrick referred to it, he says he's a big fan of the 80% solution.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, I like that, you know, so so let's just do our best and let's ease up a little bit on the hardness of the mandates and just do our best. Let's all, we're all in this together. So, you know, let's, you know, do this cooperatively.
Well, I guess some people feel like unless you put it in writing and say, this is going to happen, then it isn't going to happen, that people won't work towards that. If you make them do it, they'll work towards that. But so I guess there's different ways you can look at it, but I just feel like you should work together. You should come up with the solutions together, and I think that is happening a little more now.
But the mere fact that they did not invite the building condo owners into that, they were not a part of that conversation.
No.
And they found out very late in the game that they were about to get hit with some
gigantic
bills.
So
they're going to change the deadline for them to push back to the originally proposed 2050.
But
they could change that back too. So down the road. So don't sit pretty on this one because they could the zealots could come back out again. Yeah.
But what do you mean they could change it back? Everyone says they can't change back the bicycle ordinance, the vision. They can't change
But of course you could change the bicycle ordinance at any moment.
If
the will was there and if you didn't have a bunch of kind of spineless city councilors who refuse to go against the pledge they made to a particular lobby to not even do even the slightest modifications, even if facts suggest you should. So,
well, look what happened to rent control back in the 90s, because that's what happened with some of the councilors on rent control.
I think that's actually
they didn't tweak anything. They didn't want to do anything.
That's a good analogy, I would say. And speaking as a person who was a candidate in 1993, don't worry, I'm not running, but who actually suggested a few tweaks that would actually accommodate some of the concerns of small property owners. And then, you know, if you suggested compromise and finding sort of accommodation, they would run you out of town.
That's right.
And that's kind of the way we're at now in terms of the politics. So if you suggest, well, maybe we can all agree with bicycle safety, but maybe there are some better ways to do this that can accommodate people, then there are people who basically run you out of town like they did to Craig Kelly. And that's a problem in the politics of today, in my opinion. It's a problem. Yeah. So anyway, well, in the remaining time, I think maybe we should at least mention something which we both paid close attention to. We had to do some of the proposals for some alterations in the way Cambridge police operate, which is not meant in any way to be a criticism for some of the very good ways in which they've been operating for some time, but you know, as has been pointed out, there was even the city council has suggested having things like body cameras,
right?
Have those for available for Cambridge Police, and even the Cambridge Police Union and pretty much everybody I know in the Cambridge Police Department said, yeah, we're okay with that, but it never happened.
Why didn't it happen? I don't understand. Why was the appropriation not made? Was it Louis? I mean, it was his watch, right?
You know, I don't really know, but it's kind of I think it's a rather interesting indication that there have been things that have been proposed or suggested that just sort of fell by the wayside. For example, remember, I actually thought there was some merit to the idea of having the outdoor lighting ordinance that was going to do some regulations on bright lights shining into your bedroom windows.
Right.
But what happened there, you know, they had a whole long string of meetings within the community development department. Yeah. And then the person who was sort of the staff person moved to Delaware, and then it just disappeared.
Really?
Huh. Just disappeared. You know, that didn't mean that there weren't some good ideas that had been hammered out. But it just vanished. And I think that's a kind of a problem, you know? Mm. So what happened to the body cams? I don't know. Maybe we should have a camera on the city staff, you know, watching them and making sure it didn't disappear, right? But anyway,
that was one of them, right? And then
that's one of them. Another one, which I would say is just as important, was the possibility of what you might be loosely called less than lethal devices and mechanisms.
Right.
So, you know, non-lethal. So, you know, in this unfortunate shooting that happened in early January, you know, they've been
on my birthday.
That's right. Yeah. And it was noted that they fired a sponge round. I wasn't even sure what that meant.
Yeah.
But they didn't, it's not like they had a broad array of alternatives available to them. So that when a perceived threat then appeared, shots were fired.
But the bottom line was there was more than one policeman. There was a group of policemen. Something could have been done differently.
So the thing is, what are the alternatives? That's just the question. Whether it's you know, they don't carry tasers, for example. In this case, that might actually have been a good alternative. And yet
people say that those can be lethal in some way, but I still think...
That's right, but at least
why don't they carry? They don't carry tasers as a rule, or they're not.
I think it's
part
just
of the department, or
I don't believe it's part of the equipment that they carry. Yeah,
interesting.
But you know, people have suggested other things. This quasi analysis of people is not well founded. You know, and they don't really understand the, you know, what you really do in an imminent threat and et cetera. But I think it's an important question about how they actually provide a good range of alternatives so the Cambridge police officers can do their jobs in the best way with the possibility of less lethal response. I mean, and I'm not second guessing what necessarily would have happened in this particular case.
Go ahead.
But it's just, I think it's just important that at least these alternatives be pursued and made available
and also in that instance, when it was, I think it was a neighbor that called 911 because they saw someone jumping out of a window. I don't know where the parents were, whether they tried to call someone, but everyone says, well, they would not necessarily, you know, they wouldn't have necessarily called Hart when they didn't even know what was going on. All they knew is they heard broken, you know. Other question, talking about Hart and alternative responses, is I am confused by we have a new hotline number for suicides or mental health crisis, 988, which I think that 9/11 can refer to 988. I don't know, but I don't know. And then Hart has their own number. I'm just so confused. Like, who do you know to call?
The thing is in a case of an emergency, you shouldn't have to look up in a phone book as to which
you will call 911, which they actually do in CAHOOTS, which has always been touted. It's been 30 plus years in Oregon. 911 is the dispatcher, and they're trained to then triage or whatever where they go. But even CAHOOTS, if it's considered a violent situation or if there's weaponry, police are involved. on some level.
Exactly. And there's a lot of
there's a lot of stuff to deal with.
There's a lot of agenda pushing that's been going on here. That's I think it, you know, and we'll see what happens when all the appropriate reports come back. You know, in the hopefully not too distant future. But anyway, you know, but it's definitely has been a topic of some discussion.
And will be.
And certainly a lot of press, both informed and not, and uninformed. And honestly, some of the Harvard Crimson coverage of this to me is
terrible.
And I actually like the fact that Harvard Crimson is paying attention, because that's a good thing. But on the way that characterizing a lot of these really sensitive things is just wrong. And it's terrible. So anyway, so those are some things. I think it's probably worth mentioning just in our last minute or so here that, you know, so they did put out the word for seeking applicants for the Cambridge Planning Board. And we'll see how that shakes out.
That'll be I think something that they will pine in on, opine.
You know, the jury is still out, I would say, in terms of how well our new city manager is doing in terms of appointments. There's some sensitive ones coming up.
Yep.
You know, Board of Zoning Appeals and eventually Planning Board and others.
Which is really the key ones that are people looking at.
I mean, I personally have a little concern that if the manager shouldn't just be counting to five on everything he does,
right?
You know, to make sure that he's got the approval, because the manager has to also manage.
That's right.
And you know, the counting to five principle has to do with when your contract is to be renewed. It's not on every single vote. The way, I'll just maybe
except that under the new under the ballot stuff, he now is going to be reviewed every year. So
I know, but they could have done that always. But I always say, I'm just going to maybe wind down with this little quote here.
Yeah,
which is that, you know, they say proportional representation is an excellent system of representation, but a lousy system of governance. You need a strong manager, basically, to balance that out.
That's a great way to end it. Okay,
all right. See you later.